The sense of absence, distance, lack of intimacy seems very difficult to solve. It's the watchmen are beating you up. It's very hard to solve. But from the outside, objectively, it often seems relatively simple if the people involved could just but see.
Welcome to The God-Centered Life with Josh Moody. Our series is called A Provocative Gospel. We're taking a look at the Song of Songs, fourth installment in that series today. A study that we're calling Lost and Found. Josh Moody is senior pastor of College Church in Wheaton, Illinois. I'm Dr. Steve, your host. Thanks for joining us. Josh, heading into a session that hinges on the idea of lost and found. And if we zoom in just a bit under that heading, it sounds like one of the discussion points will be the apparent loss of intimacy.
The loss of intimacy, yeah. The loss of a real intimacy in marriage, a loss of ultimately intimacy with Christ that this whole book is pointing us to, and how we regain that, how we find it once more.
And as we've visited throughout this study to date, the applicability is to more than just the married couple. Song of Songs, A Provocative Gospel. Here's Josh.
TV can be good sometimes, can't it? If there's a movie you like or sports that you're watching or something like that. A movie that's in my mind from this passage in Song of Songs that's a few years old now, maybe 10 or so years old, but perhaps you've seen it. It's called Castaway. Tom Hanks was in that movie. And it's the story of him being marooned on a desert island after a plane crash and all of that. And there he is with his soccer ball, which is Wilson. Do you remember that scene when he talks to Wilson? Wilson, what do you think? And it's just the brand name of the soccer ball. He is very lost. And even when he gets back to normal civilization, he still somehow feels lost. He hasn't quite recovered his sense of who he is and what life is about. Lost. Many stories are about the experience of being lost and then being found. Even Jesus' stories, many of them about this, aren't they? The lost sheep, the lost coin, the lost son. And the reason why our stories, even today, often resonate with that theme of lost and then found. Why is that? It's because all of us, every single person on the face of the planet, is living a real life story of being lost and needing to be found. Well, the story we have in front of us this morning from Song of Songs chapter 5 is a story of being lost and being found. It's about a marriage relationship, a relationship that seems to lose its sense of intimacy, but then finds it again. And because marriage is ultimately a message about Christ's love for the church, it resonates with a need to see our lostness and then be found. Well, first, lost. And this is from chapter 5, verse 2 to verse 16. It has two parts there. There's the absence, that's verses 2 to 8. Sense, oh yeah, I am lost, absence. And then verses 9 to 16, a longing in the experience of lostness, that would cease. Now I want to remind you, and as we go through this, we have to remind ourselves regularly of this point about literature, that this is poetry. So verse 7, the lover is not literally walking out in her nightgown and being beaten up by the watchman. And then verse 9, the friends do not literally emerge into the bedroom to ask her some difficult questions about her husband. You know, no, it's poetry, my friends. It's always a series of poetic devices here to give us a sense of the experience of a very common phenomenon in relationships, which is a sense of distance. Very commonly, we go through seasons when we feel distant, even from a wife or husband or a friend, or a sense of lostness. Now, verses 2 to 8, the absence before the longing of lostness, verses 2 to 8, can be interpreted in two distinct ways. The one way is a little more risque. It's possible that verses 2 to 8 describe a first night of intimacy for a newly married couple from the point of view first of an overeager new husband and then a willing but rather disappointed new bride. And so all the language of openings and bolts and feet, which scholars will tell us are well-known Hebrew euphemisms, all in this context of the Song of Songs could easily suggest this. The man is longing. It then seems distant, and the woman feels, as it concludes, verse 8, still faint with love, or bruised with love, longing but disappointed. Now, that's one possible interpretation. The other is to look at it more as a dream sequence. I slept, but my heart was awake. There's a dream going on. And a dream sequence which describes the longing, but the sense of absence, a distance that often comes, as I say, even into the most cherished and prized relationships, even between a husband and wife at times, even between good friends, even experientially in terms of feeling, even sometimes between our relationship with the Lord himself. Now, in essence, it doesn't matter which of those two interpretations you adopt, because both are poetically describing a feeling of distance. So there's absence, verses 2 to 8, and then longing, verses 9 to 16. So the friends, verse 9, a poetic device to indicate the doubts of the lover. They're not literally there in the bedroom, sort of imposing between the wife and the husband, asking a question. They're expressing poetically the internal doubts of the bride. She's wondering to herself, you know, could he really be that good if he treated me that way? Is he really better than the other options? Is he really that great? Is he really that wonderful? And so she has these internal doubts. And how does she answer these doubts? Well, in a very important way. So in verse 10 on to 16, she answers them by thinking. She thinks about what makes her man so special. And it starts with his head. And I think it does that because it's not just physical beauty she's describing, it's his attitude, his mind, his personality. And then there are all sorts of images that evoke her sense of, oh, this really is the guy for me, this is the man for me, purest gold and doves and milk and jewels and all this, some of which resonate with us today, some of which do not. But then, for instance, verse 14, she says, his body like polished ivory. Or as we might say, oh, he has a six-pack set of stomach muscles. She thinks, he really is great in every possible way. I love this man. He is wonderful. She begins to think. And then verse 16, very importantly, look how it concludes. He's not just a lover. Verse 16, he is a friend. This is an emphasis that several teachers on this passage recently have made, and I think it is extremely helpful. And so I want to emphasize it for us. Rochelle, my wife, when she was a teenager, was given this piece of advice by an aunt, or as you would say, an aunt. You know, not the little thing, but the person. You understand what I mean now, I think. So an aunt, however you say that. By the way, it's a great grace, I think, for me that after all these years, I still cannot imitate an American accent. It is impossible. I think it protects me from going too far in all sorts of ways. So this relative gave Rochelle this piece of advice. She said, when you're looking for a husband, you want to look for someone who's going to be your best friend. And this really was very helpful to Rochelle. Gave her a sense of what she was looking for. Someone who's really going to be my best friend. Not just romantic, oh, that's fine, but a friend, you see. Well, the same is true for those of us who are married now. It's not just who we're looking for in prospect, it's who we have in reality now. we enjoy doing things together, that friends enjoy doing together, a cup of coffee or talking, just being together like friends enjoy being together.
More on love and friendship in just a moment. You're listening to Josh Moody, Senior Pastor of College Church. We'd love for you to copy this link if you're listening to us online, or let somebody know where and when you're hearing it over the radio, and share the word as we look to expand the ministry. Thanks for your help in doing that with us. Back into our study in Song of Songs, here's Josh.
Now, if you are experiencing relational distance between you and your spouse, here then is modeled for us at least one way to solve it. Think about the things that make him or her better than anyone else. Now, he's so great because of this. She's so great because of that. Now, that's true for our relationships, our friendships of various and many kinds. But it's also true for our relationship with Jesus, that our thought life about God and how wonderful he is so important. Richard Sibbes, who was a great Puritan preacher from the 17th century, has an exposition of this section of Song of Songs. It goes from chapter 4 to chapter 6. He has some wonderful insights, and I want to share one with you. It goes like this. He says, "We are as we think and feel. We are as we affect. Our affections are," he says, "as their objects be." That is, the way we think and feel is ultimately who we are. And that is influenced by where we focus our objects of those affections. And he writes, "If they be set upon better things than ourselves, they are bettered by it." Now, by the way, this is why it's important and not just prudish to say, it matters what we watch, it matters what we read, it matters what we think. If we are setting our affections on what is better than ourselves, we are bettered by it. As our affections are, we are. And he carries on, "They're never rightly bestowed, but when they're set upon Christ. That is the secret of all holiness. A glance of faith saves. It is the gaze of faith that sanctifies." Where you think, where you feel, set upon Christ. And there are many other beautiful things in this world, relationally. All these good gifts are given from God for us to enjoy, receive with thanksgiving. So as we thank God for them, we enjoy them. We realize how wonderful they are. And so he says, "And upon other things, as they answer and stand with the love of Christ." Jesus' love permeates everything. Now, of course, this loss that is answered by this thinking, the loss is, or can be, immense. Someone who is single and longs to be married, someone who is married and finds that marriage difficult and is perhaps not experiencing the intimacy for whatever reason. Emotional distance, a lack of intimacy, is difficult. We are made for that kind of intimacy. And with the fallen world in which we live, our lostness impacts our experience in negative ways, profoundly. I know a man who told me that after a particularly painful loss, he realized that a year later he had gone by, and he realized that every day that whole year he had wept. Loss. Yes, it is difficult, it is profound, but it's also an opportunity. It allows us to discipline our affections, to set our affections on what is really highest, what is truly best, what is worthy of the preciousness of our heart. We're bettered by it. And see, sometimes God gives us a season of loss in his sovereign purpose to teach us that his love is better than any other. And perhaps the whole journey of life is to teach us that. Well, first, loss. But second, finding. Well, this is chapter 6, verses 1 to 3. And there the friends come again. And once more, let me just remind you, it's poetry. They're not literally there in the bedroom asking the question. They are now expressing the greater confidence that the bride has because she has disciplined her thought life, her affections. And so she's beginning now to search for this intimacy. And then verses 2 and 3, suddenly she finds that he's right there with her. She's been looking for this intimacy, and there he is, right there. I have a lot of sympathy with this part of the poem, the song here, because I myself sometimes find it pretty hard not to get lost when I'm traveling somewhere. I love GPS for that reason. I imagine her, as it were, poetically taking a right down some alleyway, not knowing where she is, taking another right and another right and another right. And finally looking at the GPS and realizing, oh, I'm home. Oh, there he is, right there. Actually, the intimacy is just waiting for me right there. Again, it's not literal, the journey here that she takes in this story, but it's a poetic device to indicate something really profound. And I want to speak this to you, and listen up. This is a pastoral important point. When someone finds that they are feeling a sense of absence from his wife or from her husband, see, unless they're a professional counselor or pastor, they may be in a situation they've never been in before, never come across it before. But when you're privileged to enter into many of those situations, you know there is at least one typical, common, if not standard, pattern in those many situations. The sense of absence, distance, lack of intimacy seems very difficult to solve. It's the watchmen are beating you up. It's very hard to solve. But from the outside, objectively, it often seems relatively simple if the people involved could just but see. There may be all sorts of things that she did or he said, but if they could but see, there he is. There she is, right next to him, coming down into the garden. And the reason why it's right there, even though it seems very distant, is because what we're talking about really is choice. An attitude. And so she has disciplined her mind and her thought life and her affections. Oh, the intimacy's right there. This wonderful person, he's right next to me. I remember when Rochelle and I just had two children, and we were going for a walk in a wood in the New England countryside. Rochelle was carrying one child in a sling, you know, those things that people have that you kind of carry the child in front of you, and the other was running happily ahead. It's a beautiful fall day. The sun was shining, the birds were singing, the sky was blue. Dappled sun shone through the trees to speckle the leaf-covered foliage at our feet with drops of gold. And we smiled at each other, and then he was gone. We called, we cried out, we ran headlessly at first, and then carefully, an organized way, tracing every line of the pathways of this small wood until we had to say, he was gone, lost. In numbed shock, beginning the internal blame game of guilt, what did we do there? With all that going on internally, we made our way back to the car park to make the phone call no parent wants to make to the police. He's lost. And as we turned the corner to the car, there he was standing by the car. Found. Right there. In the garden, if you like, at home, next to the car. Lost, found. See, many couples I meet are making their way despairingly back to the car to call the authorities, even a legal team, when if they could but look up, focus their minds and hearts, there he is, standing by the car. It's darkest before dawn, they say. So often true relationally. There he is, right there. The one I love, Now, this actually has a big picture point, and this influences us far more than we think. All our postmodern theologies are really theologies of lostness, authentic angst, urban grit. And so we are encouraged in multiple ways, in the songs we hear and all that, to embrace who we are, be real about who we are, be honest and open about our identity and situation, and that's good. Indeed, in fact, we are far more lost than we can even express. But at the same time, we are far more loved than we could ever dream about or write poetries about or imagine. Christian theologies, you see, are not only theologies of lostness, they're also theologies of being found. Here's one reflection on this theme. When my soul is tired of trying and my heart is weary of waiting and my eyes are sad of tears and my brain is full of fears, when my muse is dead and gone and my lips sing no song, lost. But then these things are all signs of the need of my times, that I should find someone with whom to be a someone too, and not just a me. So this experience of being lost, this confusion that comes with our postmodern narratives of chaos, is actually the first step to being found. The lost son, the lost coin, the lost sheep, the lost bride. You come home and there he is in the garden, waiting for you, looking for you all along. Think of him. Think of how Jesus tells the story of the prodigal son. Even my father's hired hands eat better than this. I will arise and go home. Think of what makes him or her so beautiful, so wonderful. Think of his radiance, his loveliness, his friendship. And come home to the garden.
That's Josh Moody, and this is The God-Centered Life. So much to unpack there, and just one statement that kind of jumped out at the end. So this experience of being lost, this confusion that comes from a postmodern narrative of chaos, is actually the first step to being found. Josh, just the connection of chaos and lostness creates a powerful evangelistic image, but it also applies to those feelings of a sense of relational loss.
Yeah, so perhaps you're in a marriage situation where you feel there's distance between you and you're looking to regain that kind of connectivity, and the path for that is through Christ and the gospel.
And God is a creative God who created in a very orderly fashion. And so if we deny God, we're kind of heading to chaos just as default, are we not?
Yeah. So you're not going to be able to be found again until you recognize that you're lost. And that, of course, is the narrative of the gospel. And the counter-narrative of that, with the postmodern narrative of chaos, is this undoing of God's ordered world. Of course, God is ultimately in charge, and nothing can undo anything that he wants to remain connected and moving forward. And here's the book of Song of Solomon that's celebrating a beautiful, intimate marriage around honoring God, and itself then points to Christ. And so for those of us who are married, let's embrace Christ in our marriage. And when you see a married couple that is connected around Jesus, what you're picking up is the work of the gospel in their lives that leads to greater relational connectivity that itself is a sign of Christ and the gospel.
Fantastic. Thank you, Josh. GodCenteredLife.org, brand new offer. Swing by. It's a fantastic book by Max Lucado. If you're able to share a gift with us of any amount, we're going to send you a book from Max. GodCenteredLife.org. Next time we get together, you can't buy it.
You see, unlike the commercial transaction of business, it's not a product. Intimacy is only a gift. And this is why those who seek intimacy at the end of a credit card will be disappointed.
We'll continue our study in the Song of Songs when we get together next time. Brand new offer for you at GodCenteredLife.org. And this is your warm invitation to join us for the next edition of The God-Centered Life with Josh Moody.